Caroline, Willie, and D-Mace rolling on. Special holiday time here, so we've got a little merging of shows. Caroline under the weather, down for the count, but not for long. She'll be back very soon, hopefully by tomorrow. Willie Donick, Derek Mason here with you. We've got Joe Dubin here with us as well. Chase McCabe with some suit duties has been in and out of the lineup today. So we're trying to make it for one more hour, and then we will send it to the bowl coverage. But Elliot Friedman, nice enough to join us, shaking up his schedule a little bit to join us about an hour earlier than normal. But, Elliot, hope you had a great holiday here. I know, just like everybody around the league, you try to catch your breath for those 3 days. And so hopefully you're back and recharged.
Yes, I have to say, like when I was on last Thursday and I asked if I was coming back this week or on this week, and you guys said you're not sure, 99% of me believe the answer would be no. So I'm actually impressed that you guys are working.
Oh, no question. No question. D-Mace, he's got his nose to the grindstone. He's ready.
Yes.
But so, Elliot, let me throw this at you. We've had some interesting ones. I know I texted you after one of them, but we had another one last night, and sort of the issue is the referee's use of the replay system. There were actually two in the game last night, a loss by the Predators to the Hurricanes. But I had some people reach out to me after the game, and we were a little bit confused even during the broadcast of what you're able to do. Wes McCauley, maybe the best ref out there, right? Utmost respect, got a great flair. You love it when he's in your building and involved in a game. There's a play where Gus Nyquist scores. I don't know if you saw this play, Elliot, but Gus Nyquist scores a goal, and as he's watching the goal go in, he's not looking, and he gets run into by Andrei Svechnikov, and it knocks him out for a while. He went into the protocol to get checked out. He missed about 10 minutes of the game. And so they saw this. They decided to huddle up as a group and review the play. So you have to call a five-minute major to review it.
Yes.
And he doesn't say, Wes McCauley, what the penalty is. He says, we have a five-minute major. We're going to go take a look and review. And then I didn't know at that point if he's able to, it's either five or zero, or could he say it's two?
Two. He can say two.
Well, that was interesting to us. So he didn't say what the penalty was, and I don't know what you would call that. Interference, I guess? But give me your thoughts on maybe how the referees are trying to use the replay system, but how much leeway do they have sometimes? Because it's a slippery slope if you go in and you start looking for one thing and you see something else.
Well, you know, Willie, when you sent me the note about the game last week in Philadelphia, I was actually watching that game when that happened. I happened to be sitting, I was working last Thursday night. We had a regional broadcast. And I was watching that play when it happened. I saw it all unfold. And when they called initially Trennan for a hit to the head,
right?
I was like, that's kind of weird. But I did know that at one time the league was investigating the possibility of if somebody gets hit and their head is their head gets impacted, like they get smashed into the boards and their head gets impacted, should that be a hit to the head? So initially, that's what I thought they were thinking, that, okay, well, maybe they must have done this, and I'm just, like, sometimes you miss things, so I was like, maybe they must have done this, and I just wasn't aware of it. That's not the case. Basically, what I think happened in that particular situation in Philadelphia was they made the wrong call, but they felt they had the right idea. Like, ultimately, they're going to say, we want to make the right call. We definitely felt that was boarding, and maybe we didn't get to the proper route. Maybe we didn't take the proper route. Like, my ways took me the wrong the longer direction, but we got to the right spot. So I was working last night. I did not see this specific play. So allow me just to mention, I'm referring to this without seeing the specific play. But my theory is that based on what happened last week in your game in Philadelphia, they said, let's huddle up, let's call the penalty so we can review it, and then we can see exactly what we're dealing with here. Now, the rule used to be, Willie, that if you called a five-minute major, it had to be a penalty. It could only be a five or a two. And then they started seeing some situations where they were calling high-sticking majors, and they realized that, oh, wait, it was the teammate's own stick, or maybe it was another stick from a teammate lifted the opponent's stick into him. Like, it really wasn't a high stick. They said, why should we have a penalty? Why should we be married to the fact there has to be a penalty if it wasn't a penalty? So they brought it in a couple of years ago. I think it was before last season, that it could go either 5-2 or 0. So I think what you saw last night was these guys saying, okay, we see something here. We don't like the looks of it, but we want to review it. It's basically, for lack of a better term, and if the league hears this, I know I'll get a phone call, a cheat code.
Yeah, I think, like you said, you use the Waze reference. I think our reference was in math class. Mm-hmm. You get the right answer, but your teacher goes, I'm not really sure about how you got to the answer, but somehow the answer was...
I'm going to dock you a couple points.
Right, so the answer is 4. Yes. You got that, but you didn't do the formulas right. But I see that. That's a good way to go, but I do think that can lead to some other issues, right? We talk about it in other sports, too. The right way, yes, to use replay. Yes. Like in college football, there is a rule called targeting where you can look at a hit to the head like that, and it still isn't perfect, right? And so it's never going to be perfect, but you want the refs to be able to look at things when they get a chance, even if you don't end up liking the end result.
Well, I think the other thing, too, is especially when it came to Trennan, it was like there was an epidemic of hits from behind.
Right.
And I think that the league would privately admit that if one of those hits, and I'm talking about the one with Florida and Columbus, Nick Cousins and Erica Branson, if that one had been adjudicated differently, then a lot of this wouldn't have happened. So I think the clampdown came and they were like, just start making these calls and stop this before it gets way out of control. So I think that's kind of what happened there with your call in Philly last week.
We'll talk with Elliot Friedman, 32 Thoughts Podcast. You can go check him out. Please do. It's a great lesson. Now, Elliot, the Predators, they take a huge loss last night against the Hurricane, 5-2.
Yep.
And it seems like, and I said this to Willie, I said it seems like this team can go on like a 2 or 3 game run, 4 game run, and then all of a sudden it sort of hits this wall. And when they hit the wall, it's like, they hit the wall in a bad way. It's not a close game. The Stars game was close, but it's typically they're getting blown out. They're getting beat by 2 or 3 goals. And the question that I want to ask you right now, they sit in second position in the wild card. They're right below Arizona. Well, they're tied with the Coyotes in points. Does this team have enough, like, you know, that second tier of talent? Do they have enough to consistently make a run into the playoffs? Because, like I said, they remind me of this wind-up toy where you wind it up and for 4 or 5 games they're playing hard and then all of a sudden the car slows down and they just hit a block.
So what you're saying is that team could not play for John Harbaugh, right, Derek? Is that what you're saying?
Probably not, no. But
yeah, so you know, I totally understand where you're coming from, and this is what I always believe, Derek. And it always goes back to this for me. Whenever I start to see what a team is doing, I always look back and say, at the start of the year, what did you think you were, and at certain points in the seasons, what are you? And I go back to this year at the beginning of the year. This was a kind of a – I know the Predators and a lot of fans, they hate the term rebuild. But this was kind of a rebuild year for the Predators. They went out and they got Ryan O'Reilly and they got Luke Shen. They got some really good veterans. But they're trying to build a new way of doing things. New coach, new way to play. Get the kids more in the lineup, find out what we've got here. And to be honest, Derek, I think you guys have exceeded expectations. You are better than I thought you were going to be. But I don't – like, Barry Trotz's job is to be a realist. Mm-hmm. And I think the realist view is, I'm enjoying this. I'm enjoying being in the race. I'm enjoying being a little bit better than I thought, but I'm under no illusions of what we really are. And so – I think that he looks at it as, let's enjoy it. Let's let our kids play in meaningful games for as long as we can, but they're not going to do anything that doesn't make sense for the long term. Like, I don't see costly short-term moves for the Predators. I think it's, we're playing the long game, and we're going to enjoy this success that we've had this year and a playoff race for as long as we can. I think that's honestly, like, when you lose games like that, Derek, that mm-hmm. just says to me, and I think I said this to you last week, if you guys have a bad night, you're not good enough to overcome it. If you just, if it's not there, you're going to get pelted. So you better be there a lot more often than not.
So you don't see them potentially being a player once the trade deadline comes?
I think if they're going to be a player, you know, maybe they do something. Like, the only way I think they're going to do anything major is if it's at a what they think is an inexpensive price or a player that they have control over. And that, I'm talking about adding. Mm-hmm. Like, if somehow the Predators are handing a young player that they think is really good that they can have team control over for a while, I think you always consider that. But more likely, Derek, I think that, like, it doesn't make sense for them to trade their top draft picks. It doesn't make sense for them to trade their top prospects. They're still growing. I wouldn't do that if I were them. But, you know, could they subtract maybe one of their defensemen or a couple players? Yes, I think that's possible. And if some good young player was gifted to them, sort of like how, you know, Forsberg was all those years ago, I'm sure they're going to consider that.
Boy, if they could. If they could get anything close mm-hmm. to that, mm-hmm. that's yeah. a pretty good one, I would say. Elliot, it was an interesting...
That's the franchise defining.
Yeah, that was the grand slam that happened at the last minute. Elliot, there was an interesting game last night. Minnesota knocks off Detroit. And, of course, Nashville is headed to Detroit here very shortly to play the Red Wings. First of all, what do you think has gone on to account for this dip for the Red Wings in your mind? They've lost 8 out of 10, and... They were really a great story for a while, but now they're going through some adversity.
Well, they're giving up a lot of goals, Willie. Like, it sounds stupid. Like, you know, it's thanks tips. it sounds really, really dumb, but they're giving up a lot of goals. I think Reimer, the goalie, I think he's given up 5 goals in 4 or 5 straight games. So, like, you're not going to win like that in this league. You can't win like that in this league. The guy who's been their best goalie this year, Alex Lyon, and I saw some video of him today taking some shots. He's been out, and at the beginning they just didn't play him, and then once he started playing and went on a bit of a run, he got hurt. So, and I'll say this: like, in the Eastern Conference, there's been 3 teams this year that I think a lot of us got either fooled on or we just aren't very bright, and that's Buffalo, Ottawa, and Detroit. And they're all really talented young teams that have flopped this year. And the issue there is that, you know, the hardest thing to do in this league is check. Everybody looks great when they've got the puck. What do you look like when you don't have it? How good are you at getting it back? How aggressive are you? Can you check? You know, one of the greatest winners that the sport has ever seen, a guy named Bob Gainey, who played for the Montreal Canadiens. He won Stanley Cups as a player. He won Stanley Cups as a general manager. He always told me, he says, if you cannot check, you cannot win the Stanley Cup. And if you can't defend, you're not going to win. And Detroit has real problems defending, and they have real problems stopping the puck. Like, all the offense in the world is not going to help you if you're like that.
Another classic one that you can take a moment in time and pick any different sport is the coaching change sometimes it works, yeah, sometimes it doesn't. And a guy who is labeled like Joe Torre in baseball, this guy's never going to win anything. Why would the Yankees want to take Joe Torre as the manager?
Yeah.
And then now he's a Hall of Famer. And I'm not saying this is going to happen with the next one, but I want to ask you about John Hines, because he went through that, you know, washing machine, if you will, when the team was struggling here. It's the coach. They just need to change the coach, et cetera. And his defenders, like me, would say, well, this guy's a good coach. It doesn't mean he can't coach just because a team is struggling. And now he goes to Minnesota, and they're 11-3, and I don't know what the next 20 games are going to look like, but it looks like he's the right guy in the right spot for them.
Well, I think there is something to the coach bounce. I do believe that can happen. You know, I think it's really interesting. Like, when I have to watch Minnesota, like, for one thing, Minnesota's goalie, the number one goalie, Gustafson, he was really struggling. And he's making saves now. So that's one thing. Like, the thing about Hines, when he was in some of the places he's been, he was seen as a really rigid guy. And, you know, it's kind of funny because I had some people who disputed that in Nashville, because like Yossi, you can't be too rigid with Yossi. You have to let him be who he is. And now this year, as a matter of fact, what's kind of happened with Yossi is that Andrew Burnett has kind of asked him, okay, Roman, we need you to change a little bit. And Yossi has done that, and I think it's helped both player and team. But I think that one of the things that someone has told me, interestingly, about Hines early on is that he appears, and I have to watch more to see it, is that he's not as rigid as he was in New Jersey or Nashville. And, you know, someone said to me that sometimes what happens in coaching to be successful is you start and you have all these rules, and some of them work and some of them don't. And the question is, do you adapt? And someone who's just watched Minnesota and knows Hines a bit told me he sees a guy who's really learned that lesson. Like, Hines has told the story about how he went to some people and said, what do I have to do better? And he heard some really blunt things. And someone has said to me that one of the things that he heard was, you have to be willing to bend a little bit more in some of the things that you do. And I'm trying to find more of those answers, but that's one of the things that has been proposed to me.
Good stuff. Elliot, thanks a lot for joining us. We'll chat again next week as we move on to 2024. All the best to you and your family for the new year.
You too, and please excuse our sneezing.
It's that time of year.
I wish you guys all the best. Happy New Year, and Happy New Year to all the great hockey fans of Nashville.
Awesome. Elliot Friedman joining us, 32 Thoughts, Hockey Night in Canada, and I highly recommend the 32 Thoughts podcast. All right, when we come back, Chase McCabe will take over the reins. I'm going to head over to the airport. Predators flying to Detroit. It is the Red Wings tomorrow night, and then back-to-back in Washington, D.C. against the Capitals, a rematch on Saturday night. So, tough test, two more games against the East, and that will be it for the calendar year 2023. Stay tuned. You're listening to Caroline, Willie, and D-Mace here on 102.5 The Game.
Caroline, Willie, and D-Mace brought to you by Zen Sports. Start earning cash rewards on your bets today. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-889-9789. Terms and conditions apply. You must be 21 years or older and in Tennessee to bet. Chase McKay, Big Joe Dubin, and Derek Mason, our favorite.
We're here till what, 1?
1 o'clock?
1 o'clock. What's the bowl game?
We got three that you just heard me promote there, but we got the Pinstripe Bowl between Rutgers and Miami starting at 1 o'clock.
Is Greg Schiano still coaching Rutgers?
I think so.
Wow. Okay.
Tennessee fans should know that.
Right. Do that. What's after that?
Then we got the Pop-Tart Bowl.
Oh, yeah.
Pop-Tart. Did y'all see the trophy for the Pop-Tart Bowl?
Love it.
It's kind of cool. It looks like the Lombardi Trophy with Pop-Tarts in it.
With Pop-Tarts coming out.
Yeah, who's in that game?
NC State and K-State.
Okay. It's in Orlando.
And then the Alamo Bowl tonight, between Arizona and Oklahoma.
That was always a fun bowl game, Alamo Bowl, because it was late at night and it was just chaos that went on. I want to ask Mr. Mace about something. We talked about Joe Flacco, and you caught the long pass from him. Mm-hmm. It said in that game, Troy Polamalu had an interception. What was it like going against Troy Polamalu, who was one of the best safeties of all time?
That's a good question.
It was like going against Ed Reed, but maybe not. I think Ed, at least in my opinion, I think Ed is the best safety to ever play the game.
Now, well, you saw him every day in practice.
Yeah, I saw him every day. But not only that, he was a underrated athlete. Ed was. He can play. If you needed him to play wide receiver, he can play wide receiver. He can return punts, kickoffs. Right. He can do everything you asked him to do because he was just and I think that's what made him so good, that he was so versatile. Troy was a risk taker, but it was calculated risk. And everybody knew on Pittsburgh team when Troy was going to take that risk because you had to back him up. You had to be behind him. And if he took a risk,
right,
you had to make sure you had to cover his tail when he took that risk. But he was a big hitter. And he was just – he was a hell of a player, but he was just extremely smart in what he was doing. But they had a lot of really – like, everybody knew their role on a Pittsburgh Steelers defense.
Right.
And he was the captain. It seemed like he was the captain of the defense, but he wasn't the engine of the defense. I think the linebackers, they were the engine of the defense. He was just sort of like the conductor.
Ooh.
He was that guy.
Yeah.
He was damn, I mean, there wasn't much you can. It just seemed like he was always in the right place at the right time. That's what it was about Troy. And that game in particular, it was the AFC Championship. It's the divisional round because they went on. No, that was the AFC Championship game.
2008.
Because they went on and beat Arizona.
Yep.
That year. That interception he had, I think it was right after halftime. He returned it for a touchdown, if I can recall. It was either a last score or right before that. That basically sealed the game for them because we had to get into a hurry-up offense, and that's when Ryan Clark hit Willis McGahee and knocked him out of the game and knocked himself out as well. Wow. It was a huge hit down the middle of the field. And, you know, but that team, I mean, they were hell to play against.
Oh, I'm sure.
And one of the reasons was because Troy, you always had to find where he was. Because he would always be in different spaces or different spots on that defense.
What about Charles Woodson?
I think Charles was I always got the better of Charles. Always.
My man.
Even in college, I always got the better of Charles. I don't know why.
even in college.
But I got the best of him, you know, the better of him each time we played.
Nice.
I didn't see him. I saw him as a tremendous athlete. I didn't see him as a tremendous corner. I felt I went up against better corners from a technical standpoint. He wasn't – if people ever ask me, well, who's the best corner you went up against, it wouldn't be Charles Woodson.
Who is it?
Who's the best DB? It can be a corner or a safety.
Ty Law was the best corner that I went against. Why? Because Ty was so technically sound. Like – he and I were right around the same size. He had great feet, great instinct. He was strong, physical. And back then, you got to understand, they allowed corners to grab you and do all this other stuff. But not only that, he had good feet. It was never like he was off balance. Do y'all remember when we went down to New England? I think it might have been 98, 99, somewhere around 2000. Where
you went up there?
Yeah, we went up there and he caught. It was early. It might have been 98. We went there and we threw an out route.
Well, what logo was on your helmet?
Yeah, I think it might have been.
I remember you guys got beat. Eddie almost scored a touchdown or something. I remember that game.
He intercepted it out. He read it perfectly and scored a touchdown. It was a pick six, I think, for like 60, 70 yards, somewhere around there. He was just so technically sound. Back then, that he was a hard matchup for big receivers as well as for smaller receivers. That's why I look at Darrell Revis because Darrell Revis is sort of like a derivative of Ty Law. They were cousins, so I can understand why they both played the exact same way. That's why, to me, you know, he's one of the top corners as well, Darrell Revis. And I caught him, Darrell, at his early stage. I didn't get a chance because I didn't get a chance to play him as much. I think we played him his rookie year. Played him once or twice after that, but then I end up being on the Jets team. But I never really had a true battle with Darrell Revis because I was at the tail end of my career,
right,
and he was just starting his.
Let me ask you this. What was it like watching Tom Brady? I mean, I know y'all battled quite a bit, but to see him go down the field and all that. I mean, you had a front row with Brady.
Yeah, but you didn't think of Brady as Brady. Like, you didn't think of him as – like what he is, what he ultimately ended up being.
Right.
You knew that they were a well-coached team. They were not going to make many mistakes. And they had a hell of a defense. They had, I mean, their defense was really, really good. And from an offensive standpoint, they just dinked and dunked you to death. They ran the ball effectively. They always kept you off balance. But we didn't look at Tom as the Tom he ended up ultimately being. We knew he was a damn good quarterback, but nobody was talking Tom is the greatest quarterback of all time back then. They were not. It was that team. You know, they had the best team. When you're talking about offense, defense, special, they had the best team in the National Football League.
And I'm looking here when you guys went, the 2009 team, you got beat by the Colts again, right, in the playoffs? What's going on here?
Yeah, Coach, we couldn't get over that that hump with the Colts, man. We couldn't do it. We got over it
but
once.
That's what I'm looking for. You guys beat Brady in the 2009, the wild card round.
Oh, yeah, we put a spanking on. I think we ended up beating them 40-something to 7, 14, somewhere around there.
Yeah, 33-14.
Yeah, at one point it was 30-something to nothing. You know, 33-0 or 28, because we got on them so fast and we took them out of what they could do from an offensive standpoint.
Yeah, I guess 24-0 in the first quarter.
Yeah. So, and it wasn't because, I mean, Ray Rice ran crazy that day.
That's great.
Oh, my goodness. He was a madman that day in regards to him running the football. We just had their number for whatever reason. We always played New England tough.
Right. Yeah.
And I like talking about stories like this. Even the year they went 17-0, well 16-0 in the regular season, the Giants and us were the two teams that should have beaten them in the regular season because they played the Giants at the end of the season and that game was close. We played them and they had maybe 3 or 4 games left, and it took the crazy part about it is 4th and inches at. At our 40 or midfield, 4th and inches, they call a quarterback sneak. Didn't get it. We win the game. Didn't get it. But Rex Ryan calls a timeout. Rex Ryan calls a timeout. And it negates our stop.
Oof.
And then they go down and score. Bart Scott gets upset. He grabs the ref penalty.
When he chucked the flag?
Yeah, he chucked the flag. They tackle on 15 yards, and it's just mayhem because we're all like, it was like they gave the game to the Patriots. Not only did we have Rex Ryan calling a timeout, you know, right before, and I understand why he called it. He felt they were not in the best defense, so he calls a timeout. But we end up stopping them on 4th and 1, so that negates the stop. Then they have another play. Then it gets pass interference. Bart gets go crazy. He upset. He grabs the flag, chucks it. They tack on another 15 yards. And we end up losing again. They throw a pass like toward the end. And one of their guys, but that's not even a kicker. We get the ball back. We're driving. Joe Flacco throws a Hail Mary. Mark Clayton catches it at the 1 yard line.
That's right.
And tried to get it in, and we couldn't get it in. Game's over.
Kyle Bowler.
Oh. Yeah, Kyle Bowler, not Joe Flacco. Kyle Bowler.
Yeah, you scored the first touchdown of that game.
Oh, I was killing him. I was killing him. I was killing New England.
Bowler was the starter?
Yeah, Kyle Bowler.
2007.
Yeah. Kyle Bowler was the starter.
So that was before Steve or after?
No, that was Steve got there in 05. Steve was hurt. Steve got hurt.
That's right. That's right.
So Bowler had to start. And Bowler played a good game. Played a really good game. But
so wait, you were in that game when Bart Scott chucked the flag into the stands.
When he chucked the flag, he got mad and that tacked on another 15 yards.
So I was on I was watching that game. I was in Murfreesboro, and I was on the phone with my dad.
Uh-huh.
And you know, there was a little bit of a delay between both our TVs, and so he was ahead of me, and I hear him go, "What the bleep just was that?" And I go, "What?" And I'm waiting for it, and I see him pick that flag up and chuck it. And I'm like, I say the same thing to him. Yeah. Like, I've never seen that before.
Nah, I mean, and I get it. The emotions were high. They were coming in an undefeated team, and we had a shot to beat them on Monday night. That year, we didn't. I don't think we went to the playoffs that year, too. I think that was one of the years we did miss the playoffs. But we always seemed to play New England tough, and we had it in our hands. And because of the timeout and then the penalty, it just wiped everything away.
However, defensive coordinator Rex Ryan called a timeout right before the play, giving the Falcons a chance for Brady. He did successfully did the quarterback sneak to get the first down. Mm-hmm. And then the last play of the game, Bowler's Hail Mary pass to Mark. Where were you? Why didn't you catch a damn ball?
I was on the other side running a I was running a go. They had three, was it two over here and one over here, which I was a single guy, and I ended up running to the spot. So it was like, okay, if you knock it down, I'm right in front of the ball. Somebody else is behind the ball. But Mark ends up catching it.
Why don't you just flip it back?
They had him wrapped up. When he caught it, they had him wrapped up, and it was a yard away, a damn yard once again.
You guys are leading them into
one
the
yard
fourth
short.
Quarter.
Yeah. Haunts your career, doesn't it?
Exactly. 1 yard short. So basically, I was 2 yards.
Wow.
If you had them both up. So, yeah, but those, we had a shot to beat them, and we didn't. But I always seem to have good outings against New England for whatever reason. But that was a good game. That was.
Okay, real quick. Mm-hmm. As, you know, as a fan watching Brady, there were moments where, you know, I was just in awe of him. Mm-hmm. That, like, you know, some of the things that he did you ever, you know, you were never going to admit it at the time, but did you ever have those moments when you were standing on the sideline watching him, or did Ed or any of the defenders kind of tell you that there's just stuff that he does that was special, or was that just kind of the fans' point of view?
I think it was more so the fans' point of view. There were only two people that, you know, I was in awe of. Well, three in awe of. One was Jerry Rice. When I first Jerry Rice, so I'm like, oh, my goodness, Jerry Rice. Like, oh. So I was in awe of that. And then it was Calvin Johnson. I was just and you got to remember, I'm in my career now, and I'm doing great. We play the Lions, and, you know, I'm in Baltimore at the time, and I was in awe of him because you never know when you're seeing a guy from the outside in on television. You're like, okay, this guy's great. He's doing some things, but then when you actually see him in person, this guy seemed like he was all of 6'6". See, but he wasn't just like a basketball slim. He was a big guy. And I'm just looking at him. He's towering over everybody. The quarterback, some of the linemen, definitely the other receivers and running backs. But he looked like a man amongst boys. And the play that just sent me over the edge was we put three guys, no lie, we had three guys on Calvin Johnson. This why – to me, besides Jerry Rice, Calvin Johnson is the best receiver to ever play in the National Football League, and there will never be another guy like him. Three guys tried to guard him, and he still caught the ball. Jumped over everybody, caught the ball. I said, man, this is unfair. This is truly unfair. And the last person I was in awe of is Peyton Manning. There was Tom was great, and I will give that to him. But if you're asking me who the GOAT is, Peyton will always be the GOAT to me. It's because of what I actually – like with Tom, I went and sat down. And it's not because of any disrespect to Tom or anything, but I went and sat down and I had to, you know, get the offense and what we were doing. So I never really paid attention to what New England was doing on the field. But when Peyton was quarterbacking, it was must watch. you had to be on the sideline watching this cat play, because everything he did, he was methodical in everything. He knew every – I think he even knew what some of the players were doing on the sideline. He knew everything that was going on the field. And I was just at awe in that. Like, how can this guy be this good? But he was. So, to me – and then, you know – from a personal standpoint, when I retired, he ended up sending me a letter just congratulating me on my career and everything else, handwritten letter. So that means a lot to me. So Peyton, besides Steve, Peyton is the one guy that I just enjoyed watching. And I end up catching a pass from him in the Pro Bowl, which was great. It ended up being like a 70-something yard pass.
Nice.
And that was like, oh man, I caught a pass from Peyton Manning. It's like, that's one of those things you just, as a player, you want to do. Yeah, my quarterback is great, I know that. But catching it from another quarterback like that, I mean, come on.
Real quick, when did you wear number 82?
When?
Yeah.
My first year.
Here?
Yeah.
You were 82 at Michigan State.
No, I wasn't 82 at Michigan State. I was 80 at Michigan State.
Oh, you were 80.
Chase let Derek answer.
Yeah, I got 80 because – two people that I tried to model my game after. Obviously, Jerry Rice, just love watching him. But Andre Rison, I loved Andre Rison, man. Yeah. Like, that was – like, I watched film of him in college at practice, watching what he did at practice. I cut my jersey like Dre Rison because he had his cut in practice. I wanted to emulate – because I saw his playing style was closer to my playing style. You know, so I wanted to emulate my game after his.
So if I say this, does this mean anything to you? Hey, turn the TV on. She damn burned the house down.
Yep.
If you know, you know.
Absolutely.
All right, we got to get to the break real quick. Ali Milinicki from Zen Sports going to give us some picks for tonight. We will do that coming up next. Caroline Willie and D. Mace chasing Big Joe in today with Derek, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Caroline, William, D. Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Chase McKay, Big Joe Dubin, Derek Mason hanging out with you on this Thursday. It's time to get some picks for tonight, Thursday Night Football. A riveting matchup, the Jets and the Browns. The Browns obviously have some things to play for. We bring in Ali Milinicki from Zen Sports to give us her picks for tonight. Ali, how are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
Doing fantastic. What do you think about this one tonight, the final Thursday night game of the year?
Well, finally, it's here, right? I like the Browns in this one. Joe Flacco seems to really have developed good chemistry with especially Amari Cooper, who is questionable for this game. But I really like how Flacco has come in. He seems to be in playoff mode. The Jets, meanwhile, their season, I don't know how much worse it can get. I don't know if it's going to be Zach Wilson or Trevor Siemian we're going to see tonight, but either way, I just don't see how they're going to score that many points against this potent Browns offense, so I'm going to go with the Browns here.
Derek Mason is familiar with Joe Flacco a little bit.
Now, Ali, looking at this Cowboys and Lions game, obviously the Cowboys are coming off a loss last week. They are favored in this game. Would you take the Lions in a point?
I actually like the Cowboys in this game to bounce back. They are at home. We know how potent the Cowboys are at home. I love the Lions to that. They were one of my preseason picks to go far into the playoffs. I still think they do, but I think this is a rough matchup for them. I think that Jared Goff can be overwhelmed at times, so I'm going to side with Dallas here.
Now, Patriots and Bills, this is a huge line for the Bills. They are minus 13 in this game, somewhere around there. Would you take the Patriots in the points considering what New England was able to do last week?
No, in fact, I'm going to go the opposite way, and I don't like laying double-digit points, but I think that the Bills, they have it right in their heads with what the Patriots did to them a few weeks ago or a month or two ago. Mac Jones isn't the quarterback anymore, but I still think that there's a revenge factor. I wasn't surprised that the Bills didn't cover against the Chargers last week. They were coming off a big emotional win, so I think they bounced back this week, and I think they win comfortably.
Well, certainly going to be a fun weekend. Ali, sorry we got to go a little quick today, but we're out of time, and they will talk to you next week.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Yep.
Zen Sports. Start earning cash rewards on your bets today with Zen Sports. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-889-9789. Terms and conditions apply. You must be 21 years or older and in Tennessee to bet. That will do it for us. Coming up next, another bowl game, the Pinstripe Bowl between Rutgers and Miami. Jared back tomorrow. Caroline hopefully back tomorrow. 102.5, 106.3, The Game.
Be love and love on your people. Peace.